Welcome to the University of Washington Library's Digital Scholarship Summer Immersion Podcast. This podcast is a companion piece to the Digital Scholarship Summer Immersion Program, or DSSI, and it's meant to give you greater insight to the world of digital scholarship at the UW Libraries. In each episode, we interview a University of Washington Library staff member whose work impacts or intersects with digital scholarship in some way. I'm Perry Yee, and I'm the Online Learning Support Manager for the Libraries.
And I'm Dovi Patino, an Online Learning and Engagement Specialist with UW Libraries.
I'm Elliot Stevens, an English Studies Librarian and Research Commons Librarian. And we are the teaching team for the DSSI podcast track. For the last 3 years, we have offered online digital storytelling workshops using video and podcasting formats. We thought this podcast would be a great way to introduce ourselves, introduce our colleagues, and give you an idea of the breadth of digital scholarship support at the libraries. Our guest for today is Andy Andrews. Andy is the Accessibility Coordinator at the University of Washington Libraries, and he works in Information Technology Services and Digital Strategies. He is an experienced assistive technology specialist with a history of working in higher education. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, Andy, so we have some questions for you today. What is your favorite thing about the summer?
I think it's that you actually get to go outside and do some fun stuff, like camping, hiking, or just sitting outside and hanging out with your friends.
Do you have any specific summer stories to tell us? Anything short and sweet?
My wife and I just got back from camping at Orcas Island. So it was the first time we'd ever been there, so it was pretty cool.
And can you tell us a little bit about, I mean, we know you're the title of what you do here, but can you tell us a little bit about what do you do here in the University of Washington Libraries?
So my role is really to help support staff members in their accessibility endeavors. So whether that's helping a department figure out what they need to do to make the content that they're creating more accessible, I help them with that. I lead them to resources. I also provide training for staff so that they can improve what they're doing for accessibility, whether it's, again, like a document creation or if they're doing video work, to help them understand like how to do captioning or something.
So you mentioned accessibility and accessible items. Can you explain what accessibility is to folks who might be unfamiliar with that topic?
Accessibility really is just this, like, access to the information. We have kind of, I would say we, like, generally we have created roadblocks to other people having access to information. So you have videos and you don't have captioning. You have basically chosen to not allow access to that information for someone who's maybe deaf or hard of hearing, or someone that has some type of cognitive audio disability where they can, like, hear the words that are being spoken, but they can't necessarily make sense of it because maybe the person's speaking off screen. And so then, so they're not seeing that face. They can't process the information correctly. So that it's kind of like they kind of lose some of that information. So that's what I'm talking about. Accessibility is having that access.
Where do the UW libraries fit into all of this?
In so many ways. Libraries are providers of information, right? I mean, that's whether it's online through a digital collection or a book on a shelf, DVDs in the media arcade. We provide a lot of information in a lot of different ways. So accessibility is really important for libraries because our reach is huge. When we have stuff on a catalog that's online, you know, or if it's someone's dissertation that's online through our servers, that has a global reach.
So say someone comes to you and asks, how can I integrate accessibility into my classroom or into my assignments or into my teaching? What would you tell them?
You'd want to look at what formats they're providing that information in. So if someone is using a lot of YouTube videos, it might be just showing them how to turn on the captioning feature in YouTube. If it's on their channel, their own YouTube channel, showing them how to edit the captions because, you know, YouTube isn't perfect. It's AI, so it doesn't do everything perfect. It's doing its best to figure out what's being said. But if there's a little bit of background noise or maybe someone has a strong Boston accent or something like that, right? Like, that's going to mess up with the AI a little bit, and you got to know how to fix that. So you really want to look at what they're trying to do and start pointing in the direction and giving them the tools of how to get there.
Okay, so say someone comes to you and says, okay, that's great. What resources do you give them to get started?
It depends. It's going to be the same resources, whether it's like a library staff member or a faculty member were to come to me, it's just how I can get them there is going to be different. With faculty members, it would be that I've got a list of links of, like, UWIT accessibility has a lot of great information on their website, so I'm going to point them there. There's quite a few blogs out there that I'm a big fan of, and I might point them towards some of the disability advocates that are working for like captioning. There's like web pages dedicated to captioning. WebAIM is a really great website to go to because it really breaks down what you need to be thinking about for someone who's using a screen reader when it comes to web design, what you need to be thinking about when it comes to captioning for deaf and hard of hearing individuals, transcripts for, you know, both that would work for deaf or hard hearing or blind, low vision individuals. So having the web is actually kind of great. I mean, it creates its own accessibility issues, obviously, if someone's not thinking about accessible web design, but it also has a breadth of resources to get people to thinking about accessibility too. So
that's for faculty and staff. What about students? Where do they turn?
They could go to a lot of the same resources. Sometimes like a student might contact one of the librarians here because they're like, oh, librarians, they know where to find things. So they'll contact a librarian who then will then direct the student to me. And then I'll point them out to a lot of the same pages that I've pointed out faculty and staff. Because it's the resources I'm using are going to be stuff that people can use for free. So they don't have to worry about, you know, like a big company can afford to pay some corporation to go out and another company to go out and make their videos accessible. Everything that I'm going to promote is how to do that is at low cost to no cost.
That's really great. It sounds like you're pointing to a lot of resources that already exist. And so where do you turn to when you want to find, you know, new resources, more innovative practices?
So I subscribe to a lot of different lists. So there's a usability universal access list that the American Library Association has. So I subscribe to stuff like that. Okay. A liaison group that the University of Washington has that I sit on so that I can get information for other people in the IT world. Accessibility is something that kind of take a lot of people to work on. As technology changes, how we make things accessible kind of has to change too to adapt. In my opinion, that's kind of problematic of how we go about creating technology, right? Like we make technology to work for us and it's not always thinking about the other another user and how they might interact with that technology. So it does require a lot of educating yourself. And listservs are great for that because I get stuff from like Inside Higher Ed on stuff that's going on with accessibility.
Internally, thinking about the needs of, you know, UW libraries and students and faculty, what kinds of needs assessments do you provide or support?
So are you talking about for staff?
Sure.
Okay. Well, for staff, it involved me really finding out what kind of content different departments were making, having to look at what you make. And so one of the big things is libraries produce a lot of PDFs. And in the early times of PDFs, those were scanned as images and not as a text-based file, which created an accessibility issue. Mm-hmm. Looking at that, looking at how we fix that, where do we make the improvements, coming up with from this point forward, we make sure that everything that's going up, all new content is accessible, and then worrying about that historical backlog.
And so we're talking about like the history of accessibility and also how it's continuing to evolve. How do you feel that accessibility intersects or interacts with digital scholarship at UW Libraries?
It intersects because anything can be made inaccessible. So digital inherently should be accessible because it's born digital and born digital. So like it was started on the computer. That's what they mean by born digital. It started on instead of a piece of paper, right, where you wrote it down, it actually started on something that assistive technology could interact with. But there's so many ways to break that. So you make a website, but you don't use good document creation standards of using things like headings. When you create a website, that makes it less accessible for a screen reader. That's something that's going to apply when someone's doing some type of digital journal or something like that. Or you guys are doing, I think they're doing podcasts here. Mm-hmm. By having podcasts, you have a very audio format. So somebody who uses a screen reader probably is going to be fine because they're just listening to the audio. But if someone's deaf or hard of hearing or has a cognitive disability, you might have a problem again with it being accessible because there's no transcript necessarily there or captioning, right? Because it's a podcast, so it's just this audio file, right? So you can create some issues if you don't think about what you're doing and actively making sure that you don't cut off some of your users.
So that about wraps up our questions for today. Is there anything else you'd like to mention that we may not have covered?
I think just when you're out there doing your work, just really try to put yourself into it. Like if this was me and I had something that made it so I couldn't listen to the audio, so maybe it's not a disability, but like maybe I'm going to be listening to it in the library and I don't have headphones available, how can I still make sure someone can have that podcast, right? How do I do that? Transcripts. So just always try to like look at it from, so from your point of view, if you took something to where you couldn't have 100% access to that, what could you do to solve that problem?
Great. Thanks, Andy. That's all the time we have for today. Check the show notes for a link to the transcript for today's recording. And subscribe to the DSSI podcast on iTunes and Google Play and wherever you get your pods. Music for this episode is provided by Blue Dot Sessions. Their song, Peacoat, served as our intro and outro music. Check them out at www.sessions.blue for recordings that are Creative Commons licensed for non-commercial work. Thanks again to Andy for chatting with us, and a big thanks to you for listening to the DSSI podcast. Catch you on the next episode.